You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. ESO, go wrestle the round table. ESO, go wrestle the round table. Wrestling is awesome. If I tear a bone on the roof, rallying up the ladder. Stop the damn match. 1, 2, 3. ESO, go wrestle the round table. ESO, go wrestle the round table. ESO, oh hell yeah.
Hey folks, this is the ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable special edition. We are going to be interviewing rather than discussing, and we're going to interview former WWE superstar JTG, and then we're going to talk to actual wrestling legend and WWE Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts, who is a very long-time favorite of mine, so very excited. So sit back, give a listen, and who knows, we all may learn something new.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC Universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
Hey, ESO Pro folks, we have a special interview now with Jason Paul, who you may better well know as JTG from Primetime and WWE, but he's got other stuff going on. He's got an upcoming movie, The Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and he's written his second book, Damn, Why Did I Write This?, the second version, I guess. The first one's already certainly well-known among wrestling fans and so on and so forth, and he's been on certain podcasts. All right, Jericho's. He's going to talk to us today, and as always, Jonathan Williams, our roving reporter, is going to take a point on that. So, Jonathan, take it away.
Yeah, well, welcome to the show, JTG. Glad to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be a guest on your show.
So, as John mentioned, one of the main reasons we're talking to you today is because you're going to be part of The Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, an upcoming film, and you got a Kickstarter going that you need to, trying to reach a goal. So tell people about that, first of all, about the Kickstarter, and then how did you get involved with the movie and what is your role in the film?
First of all, my role in the film right now, I'm playing Venom. I'm playing Spider-Man's arch nemesis. Venom, he was just a villain that you had to love because of his personality and charisma and his smart mouth. So I'm glad to be playing Venom. It's an honor. And there's a few fight scenes which I'm doing my own stunts for, so I'm definitely looking forward to that, having fun with that with Mike.
Oh, cool. So let me ask real quick, but we're on that. Is this the classic Venom, or is it one of the other incarnations? Is it Eddie Brock, or is it, anyone else? Or do you even go into that? Is it just the Venom symbiote?
I know the Venom symbiote, and I haven't seen the suit yet, so I hope it's a cool suit. I know Mike has a cool suit, cool Spider-Man outfit, so I'm looking forward to see that as soon as I get on set.
Very cool.
We'll see if it's classic or not.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Mike. Is that Mike Anthony, the director?
Yeah, he's the director and also playing Spider-Man.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
So are you friends with him, or how did you get cast in this movie?
I saw an audition for I didn't even audition for Venom because throughout the whole movie he's wearing a mask. You don't get to see his face. I actually auditioned to be the father, which got casted by somebody else, but he asked me, because of my physique, if I wanted to be Venom. And I read the script for it, and, it had some fight scenes in there. I got to do my own stunt, so it was cool. I'll do it. Let's have some fun.
So obviously, this is not, you know, one of the official Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Is this kind of a fan film or?
Yeah, this is a fan film. Yeah, it's a fan film. It's going to be an indie film. I don't know if we're, hopefully we get to do the all the festivals and get it out there.
Do you know if you know where you was it? Did he have to get rights to use the these, you know, copyrighted characters and things like that, or is he just doing it and seeing what happens?
I believe since it's an indie film, independent film, I don't think he needed rights. I'm not 100% sure. That's a question for Mike.
Okay. Cool. Well, I was able to, you know, I heard your interview on Chris Jericho's podcast a few months back, where you shared a lot of the stories from your first book, which is it only available as an audiobook or an ebook, or is it actually a physical book as well?
Oh, yeah, it's in all formats. It's a physical book, which can be picked up on Amazon. The book is called Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? If you get an audiobook, there's an ebook if you want to read it on your phone. And yeah, it's on Amazon, it's on iTunes, it's on Google Play, it's on a lot of platforms.
Well, I got to listen to both books. I kind of did a cram session, listen to both of them starting about this time yesterday. And obviously the overarching theme is heat. So I guess why do you think you and Shad in Crime Time got so much heat? I mean, obviously you tell some of the stories and explain in some instances, but it seems like you kind of just were predisposed to it almost.
Oh yeah. When we first walked through the door, we got a lot of heat. we were young, naive, and we had to learn from a lot of mistakes, you know, a lot of stuff that you just have to learn through experience. And a lot of it because of jealousy, you know, when we first walked through the doors, you know, we were one of the most popular tag teams right off the bat because of our charisma and personality. And we had a cool look. And, you know, obviously when new talent comes in, the talent that's been there for years, they see their time on TV being reduced. So, of course, that's going to naturally conjure up some heat in the locker room.
Well, I got to say, I mean, I was a big Crime Time fan, and you guys were breath fresh air, and you were genuinely funny and good in the ring. And you really kind of, I mean, complete, not exactly the same gimmick by any means, but, you know, I'm getting a little bit of there's a little bit of, you know, New Day, you know, crowd enjoyment where there genuinely can be, you know, entertaining and funny, but also good in the ring. And you guys were that way too, well before New Day ever was. But, and it disappointed me that, you know, I kept predicting you guys were going to finally, you know, get the titles and so on and so forth. And it just always was a disappointment. So it's a shame that that never happened.
Well, in the book, I explain reasons why it might not have happened. Yeah. I think there was a few incidents where we were supposed to win the titles, and then it goes heat creeping on your back.
Yeah.
Well, in both books, we didn't get a chance to mention that you have a second volume that came out just a few months ago, which is just more stories. So I guess what prompted you to write these books? Because I would think that some of the stories you're telling would just generate more heat. And I would think that, you know, after you're let go by WWE, you might hope that one day you're brought back. And, you know, obviously they're bringing people back like the Headbangers and, you know, with the brand extension or, you know, the two separate shows, they're starting to bring other people back, that familiar faces back. So do you think these books will prevent that from happening for you? Or do you think it's had any effect on your career in that sense?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the book that if we'd ever decided or negotiated on Crime Time coming back or JTG coming back, I don't think the books will prevent us from making money. At the end of the day, it's all about making money. I don't think they're worried about two books. Other wrestlers have written more disastrous and said more negative stuff than I did. I personally wrote about my experience, my personal experience with other wrestlers, I interacted with and engaged with while I was with the company. I didn't really so much talk too much negatively about the company per se.
Right.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I mean, because, you know, you're right. I mean, even not just other books, but people go on podcasts or and do, you know, all kinds of shoot interviews, and they talk about their experiences and whatever, and they'll trash talk this person or say they had issues with this person or, you know, or good stuff, too. I seem to, I mean, what I'm heading into is that, you know, you've obviously had some issues with some people and some, you know, heat and whatever, but what was your relationship with Vince himself?
Oh, I had a cool relationship with Vince.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be the answer because most people say that, and that's crazy. but go ahead.
Yeah,
please.
And his door was always open. You know, if I ever had an idea or if I ever had an issue or problem, you know, his door was always open, and he encouraged that. You know, what separated a lot of the boys was that some of the guys were intimidated and were afraid of Vince, so they didn't knock on his door. They didn't. Right. They were very hesitant. But the ones who had the balls and who took initiative in their career, they went to Vince with their issues, ideas, and creativity. And those are the ones that, some of them, those are the ones that made it to the top.
Right. Yeah, that's a story that's told over and over again. So, I mean, obviously must be true. There's, you know, so many people that work for him that have no reason necessarily to put him over, you know, have said so. But so that's great to hear. So, I mean, I don't necessarily need you having you to call names. I know that you, in the book, that you're not, you know, outright calling out names or anything like that. But I have to admit, I'm curious about who you think was your biggest enemy there, that one that probably holds you down the most.
Oh, when we first got there, we had, we had two antagonists, two haters.
Haters.
that held us down a lot when we first got there. We could have reached a lot further in our career. We probably not even got fired the first time if it wasn't for those two.
Hmm. So it was another tag team?
It was another tag team. We had our last match with them before we got released from the company the first time in 2000. Was it 7? I believe it was 2007.
Somewhere around, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, shucks. Did they ever talk to you about possibly changing your character or tweaking your character some after you and Chad broke up?
Oh, yeah. There were several discussions. I also put it in my second book, all the gimmicks that I've came up with, that I pitched, you know, to transition myself into a solo's career. You know, some fell on deaf ears. Some were tweaked a little bit and given to other wrestlers. And then as a talent, watching your...
I've actually heard one of those stories on Solomaster Sounds Off when you were interviewed by him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember you mentioning that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, intellectual property given to somebody else, that stings a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I got to ask. I mean, you know, just talking to an actual, you know, individual that's lived it. Mm-hmm. What was it like that? You know, you were working. Obviously, you're working. You know, your ass off on the road and whatever. But you weren't getting anything on Raw. I mean. That must be a very demoralizing and frustrating thing, you know, for when you're in that position. I mean, guess you were, you know, one of the major parts of the show for a while there and very popular over with the crowd. And then, you know, they don't have anything for you, so you're continually not getting to get on the show. So I can't imagine that makes you feel very good.
Yeah, at the back of your head, there's always hope. There's always hope that they recognize that you were a big part of the show, that you did have, they didn't forget that you had personality, that they didn't forget that you had charisma. And then you, like you said before earlier in the show, that I can work in the ring.
Yeah.
So you hopefully, you having hope that they remember that and that they're saving something. They have, they remember you, they got you in mind, but they need something, you need a character or storyline to put you in. So that's right. In the back of your head.
So I'm sure I know this story, but I'm trying to blink now, but who actually came up with the Crime Time angle? And is that something that somebody else invented, or did you guys invent with somebody else or yourself, or something you tweaked
I'll tell you the original Crime Time, the original tag team was myself and my first tag team partner, Abraham Washington. The WWE Universe knows him Abraham Washington.
Yeah.
His name was JTG and Dirty. We were called the Gang Stars, then eventually the Neighborhoodies.
Oh.
And then, we were in OVW doing we had the look, but the Crime Time characters that we developed, Chad and I developed, we didn't do that. It was one dimensional. We just had the look.
Right.
And Abraham Washington had some personal issues that he had to stop coming to OVW for a few months. That left me solo. Then Paul Heyman noticed me. I had good relationships with Al Snow and Danny Davis, the owner of OVW. And he's a good kid. He's got a lot of personality, good charisma. I was in the contract class in OVW. So they put me with Shad. Shad just finished working a championship angle with CM Punk. And that angle had finished. So they were like, what next for Shad? So they put Shad and I together. We were then they put us as a tag team. And then the following week after that, we were the Southern Tag Team Champions.
Great. So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's when we developed the Crime Time angle where we're going to be fun and we're going to rob stores, and we just added more dimensions to the characters.
Yeah, actually, and you did a great job. But was it a coincidence or was there ever anything mindful about, of course, the old skits on In Living Color with the the Wayans doing the guys stealing the stuff that they stole, like Shopping Network type of thing.
Yeah, growing up, Shad and I, when we decided to put these to do our characters to make it mainstream for WWE, we took everything that we loved growing up, which was In Living. You know, Snoop Dogg had his own show on MTV for a while. We got some ideas from there. I took stuff from some of my favorite artists, Nelly, 50 Cent. LL Cool J, and that's the JTG character that you have today.
Right. Awesome.
So you guys didn't really do a lot of indie stuff, if any indie stuff, before you were in OVW, which at the time was developmental, kind of in a roundabout way evolved into NXT, and then you got called up to the main roster. How did WWE initially discover you? I guess you weren't discovered together. So how were you discovered by WWE?
We were discovered as a tag team together. Shad and I did some vignettes for OVW. Al Snow, we were wrestling every week and we were having matches and winning. And Al Snow said, I'm not going to give you guys a match this week, but I do want you to get your characters over. You don't have to wrestle every week and win to showcase your personality and your character. So we took it upon ourselves to go shoot our own vignette in the park, and we went to our buddy who had a smoothie shop. He let us use it for the day, and we robbed him.
That wasn't very nice of you.
And we did a few more skits. I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But we just had fun with the camera. We had a cameraman, and we just had fun. And we brought it back. I think Chad edited the video. Can't remember exactly, but anyway, one of the writers at WWE saw the video and they thought it was hilarious, and they showed Vince. And I heard Vince said, "Hire them. I want them on Raw. Bring them up, just like that, just off those training videos." And the next thing you know, I got a call. I believe it was it a Friday? Friday afternoon, I was at work. I got the call. They asked me if I wanted a WWE developmental contract. I said, hell yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, how did you end up at OVW? Were you there? You were there prior to the developmental contract, but it was a developmental territory. So how did you end up there to begin with?
I went through the whole process. I went through the intermediate beginners class, intermediate class, advanced class, eventually the contract class. Yeah, I was there on my own dime. I was taking the bus from New York. Yeah, I was taking the bus from New York to Louisville, and I eventually moved there when I was, 18.
and I got signed when I was 21.
So having been, you know, you've done some indie stuff since your WWE release. What has it been like, you know, since you didn't really do a whole, you didn't do indie stuff to get to WWE? What's it been like, you know, working on these more intimate shows with, you know, unknown people and things like that?
Oh, it's definitely been an experience. You know, it's definitely new to me. I have to get new to the indie scene, and I'm so used to the WWE platform. But it's definitely new to me. I'm enjoying it, having fun, seeing a whole different dimension of the wrestling world. Got a few more indie shows coming up. Chad and I did one this last Friday. But yeah, it's definitely an experience.
So, who was your favorite wrestler when you was growing up?
Growing up, I had a few different favorite wrestlers, but the one who, like, my first favorite wrestler, I have to say, would have to be Bret the Hitman Hart.
I can see that, actually.
Bret the Hitman. Who is yours?
Mine, I'm a Freebirds guy. I'm here in Texas, North Texas, world class. Okay. Yeah, the Von Erichs Freebirds are, you know, my top ones. And Roddy. Roddy was mine.
Roddy Piper?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I became a fan of him through the magazines before I even got to ever see him actually wrestle. And then he went on, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling and WTBS, and so I finally got to saw him. But just the stuff I was reading about the character, you know, from after and all that was just captivating. So, yeah.
You had some stories about Roddy in, I think, your second book, right?
Oh,
really? I was telling a story about how when he got intoxicated, he would be such a sweet soul. You know, he was hugging and kissing everybody and telling stories. Mm. And then you had some of those that were the opposite.
Right. Yeah.
Well, speaking of getting drunk, your drinking stories were always funny. How is it that you, you know, given your, well, just like in one of the stories, you said the girl asked you that, like, you're a big guy, but you can't hold your liquor, it sounds like. Why do you think that is?
I don't know why I can't handle my, I have two glasses of wine in it, and I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to knock out. I can't. I'm tipsy. I don't know what it is. I don't know, because I work out a lot. I drink a lot of water. I'm not really. I try to eat clean. I have a clean diet, so maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, and you don't have a lot of body fat, so it probably just goes straight.
Doing some McDonald's before I go work out or something. I don't know. I'm gonna have to. It's making me look bad out here in these streets. So I'm gonna have to work on that. That's my goal for 2017, to work on my body fat. I could drink this beer.
Hey, let's say so. We're going from, you know, I guess teetotaler up to Ric Flair level. Right?
So, back to the movie. I saw Shad made a little cameo in the movie Get Hard a couple years ago. And now you're doing this Spider-Man movie. Have either of you, is that something you're pursuing, or have you done any other movies that that might be coming out soon or anything like that?
No, I did a movie last year. It was called Bad Night. It was on Netflix. It was about these two YouTube girls that went on had a bad night. They went on a school trip and they got stuck. They got stuck and they couldn't go home. And then they got mixed up with some thieves, and they were just getting chased throughout LA throughout the night until they made it back to their hotel where their teachers and students were. That was fun. You know, it was kind of, it reminded me of a Superbad, but with two girls, two high school girls.
What was your role in that movie?
That movie, I was the henchman. I was the one of the criminals that was chasing around the girls, trying to get them back to my boss.
So, how much would you say your WWE training and experience prepared you for acting?
Oh, it helped me out a lot with professional wrestling. You know, it's being an athlete, bodybuilder, and an actor all mixed up in one. Also, even Broadway, because there are no take twos when you're a professional wrestler. You're in front of a live audience. You have your stage, and you're surrounded by the audience. So, if I shoot, I want to do theater also. Like, if the opportunity ever comes, I think I'm also prepared for that.
Well, Jason, is there anything else we need to know, or any other information that everybody listening to this should know to get up, you know, to see about what's going on with you?
Oh yeah, you can definitely follow me on Instagram at JTG. 121084. Follow me on Twitter, JTG1284. Go to Ultimate Spider-Man. It's Ultimate_Spider-Man_film. And check out the Kickstarter. We are raising what I believe is $20,000 to get the to finish the film. Or I think we're going to finish it anyway. But you know, those funds help out a lot with production. Oh, yeah. So check out Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah, and then check out my book too. If you're a wrestling fan, even if you're not a fan of JTG, if you're a wrestling fan, you want to check out my two books or gift it to somebody who wants to be a wrestler. You know, I give a lot of tips and hints on how and a guide on how to make it in the wrestling industry and how to avoid heat and how to play the game.
That's very good information for somebody that's on that path. Absolutely. Thank you. This has been a great conversation, and it was good talking to you. And thank you for. Joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. You guys have a great day.
Well, hey, before we let you go, I don't, you know, of course you probably can't talk about it if this is the case, but have you had any talks with WWE about possibly coming back?
A few months ago there was some back and forth emails, nothing concrete really to talk about. But yeah, there hasn't been any negotiations.
Was that which is for you or for Crime Time?
No, it was I was CC'd in it.
Okay, I was gonna say, because you know the Headbangers just got, you know, we're on SmackDown last night, so you know, I just was wondering, you know, so interesting. Okay, well,
in the wrestling world, there's always a saying, "Never say never." So,
well, especially with Vince, and we've seen this 100 million times. I mean, if he, you know, he's ready to somebody come back and make some money, he's all for it.
So. All about
what
that.
What about TNA or Ring of Honor or something like that? Have you considered doing anything like that?
I considered Lucha Underground. I don't know if you ever heard of Lucha Underground. They're out in LA.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So Primetime would be a great fit there, I think.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, I went to a few shows and I was definitely impressed with the production and how they had their things set up and what they're doing. So, That was something that Shad and I would be interested in. But again, I think I'm an entertainer first before I'm a wrestler. I'm just an entertainer that happens to be a good wrestler. So we'll definitely have to be WWE is a priority if I was to ever go back into wrestling, because I didn't train to be a wrestler. I trained to be a WWE superstar. That's what I tell everybody.
That makes sense. And you know, and good luck with this, you know, role in the movie, and hope everything works out well there, and then opens up other opportunities of letting you do that. So,
thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. You guys have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
All right.
Hello, Marvel Universe. The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
Hey, folks, cats, kittens, ESO Pro has got a big one this time. We are going to talk with true pro wrestling legend and WWE Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts, personal favorite of mine for over 33 years. And Jonathan, as always, is taking the lead. So, Mr. Roberts, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're here at the DDP Yoga Performance Center. And, well, that's kind of the, in a weird way, the culmination of this whole journey with the documentary, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. But before we get into that, you mentioned this a little bit in the commentary of the new collector's edition DVD and Blu-ray that you moved to Las Vegas recently. I think you're working with a wrestling promotion there. Tell us a little bit about that.
I moved out there with the promise that there was going to be one, but that's yet to happen, man. And I don't know, man. You know, sometimes you jump in the fire and you shouldn't. And definitely I shouldn't have jumped in because these people have fallen way short. But, you know, I survived that. And my daughter and I moved out there, and we've been out there 8 months now. I love living in Vegas. I've not been to the Strip but one time. That was to visit a cousin that was in town. But, you know, I love living there, man. The weather's beautiful. I love waking up and seeing the mountains, man. I've got a beautiful place, pool, hot tub. It's all sweet. And now I'm doing this comedy thing, man. Well, I say comedy. It's not really comedy. It's not, I call it the unspoken word.
Yeah, so you got a show coming up in Atlanta.
Yeah, man.
You have some other ones scheduled as well?
Oh, man, we're going everywhere. I think I go from Atlanta to Toronto. I got a big one in Toronto, about 800 people going to be at that one. And then I go home for 3 days, and then I go on the road for 26 days straight, man, a show every night. So, wow. You know, it's pretty crazy that I'm doing this, but I've got another comedian that travels with me. His name's Alex Anzel, Kool-Aid Man, I call him. I met the guy a few months back, and you know, I meet a lot of people on the road, man, and this guy was such a talent, and he had a real problem with his weight. You know, a guy was 550 pounds, man. Wow. And I had a genuine concern, as I do for everyone that's overweight, you know. And sometimes I approach it the right way. Sometimes I don't. I don't mean to hurt people's feelings, but I do strike out there sometimes and say stuff that's pretty stupid. But that's just Jake the Snake. You know, I don't mean anything by it. But I struck out on him and encouraged him, and he took it to heart. And I told him, hey, man, if you'll commit to it and show me, I'll have you move out to Vegas and move in with me, and I'll help you get where you need to be.
That's called passing it on, Jake.
Yeah, man. And that's what I try to do all the time because I enjoy it, man. I enjoy when people come back to me and say, man, you really helped me, and my life's so much better, man. What a high that is. And he's already lost 100 pounds, man. So
that's great.
You know, he's going to come to Atlanta, and I've got him set up with a doctor here that does surgery for people that have lost a lot of weight, you know, to get rid of the extra skin. The guy helped me get my hair back, which I do appreciate. He's so awesome, man. I love my hair, man. Are you kidding? But, you know, it's all about feeling good about yourself. And the hair helped me. Him losing weight helps him. And he's doing great, man. And we're going to put a little video together. You guys will be seeing it on the internet. You can watch his journey to getting down to, like, say, 175 instead of 550. And it's incredible, man. It really, really is.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
So I saw you when you did, I guess, kind of you were kind of testing the waters of your unspoken word with Mick Foley a couple years ago here in Atlanta. And then I know you did another show here. I wasn't able to make it to that one for some reason. I forget why. But that's a side of you that – you see it a little bit in some of the bonus features on the new DVD and Blu-ray.
Playing around.
Not a side of you most people have ever seen in the documentary or in your wrestling persona. So where did that come from? How did you tap into that comedic side?
Well, you know, it's not really comedy. It's just telling road stories, repeating them, you know. And you do it enough, you learn where the pops are and where they're not. So it's just a process of learning how to do it, you know, and I enjoy entertainment. I enjoy entertaining people. In wrestling, I was much more serious because wrestling is serious to me. It should be. But comedy, man, is just making people laugh. So, I mean, as wrestlers, we do some pretty horrific things to each other, you know. I mean, insane stuff, you know. And, of course, I had the snake to add to it, which there was always something going on with that damn snake. But, yeah, man, tapped into it and have tested it. And, you know, in the beginning, I was worried about how I was going to come up with a show. And now I've got four, maybe five shows that I can actually do. And all of them different, you know. And, you know, I've got 39 years to pull from, man, so give me a break.
Well, Jake, you're talking about that cruelty sometimes that wrestlers can be to each other. You know, just yesterday, Mr. Fuji died, and of course, known as a well-known ribber. Well, did you do a lot of ribs, or did you, or what's a famous rib you know of?
Well, you know, with Fuji was brutal, man. Good God Almighty! I mean, some of the stuff he did, man, he really can't say is funny, you know. But it turns out that way when you go relook at it, you know, and pull it back up. My experience with Fuji, man, was a little different. When I went to the WWE, there was a whole lot of jealousy going on. And guys were angry that I was getting the push that I was getting, that I had that character. And a lot of them acted childish and would do things to the snake when I was out of the room to screw me up. They would mess with my gear, you know, and cut my wrestling shoe strings, just stupid shit and mean stuff. And you should never mess with the show. You know, that should be off limits. You know, you don't want to do anything that will break the show down. And they were doing that to me. And Fuji came in one night and called a meeting. And told everyone, says, don't mess with him anymore. Stop it. Said, Jake doesn't do anything to any of you guys, and he's putting food on our tables, man, which made me feel great, man, that he would even give me that. And he said, anybody else messes with Jake, he said, we'll have to have a Mr. Fuji special investigation. And there will be a retaliation, and there will be penalties and fines. So go ahead if you want to take that chance.
Wow, that's great.
He really helped me out, man.
I'm guessing no one ever messed with you again?
Nope.
John, I know you have a lot of questions, so I'm going to let you go for a while.
Well, I've got to bring this up. I mean, I'm located here, born and raised in North Texas. You're only in world class, not quite a year, I guess, you know. But, you know, I first saw you on, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, you know, when you were in the Legion of Doom and everything else. And I became a fan of you there. And then you came to my backwaters, you know. You came to world class and worked with Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez and Gary Hart there for a little bit. And I just would like to hear, you know, some of your, you know, thoughts and experiences from that time and dealing with those people.
You know, I'm writing a book, man, and I had to revisit that time in depth. And I really made a mistake when I left Georgia Championship Wrestling. Vince had tried to hire me at the time, and I was very angry that they were shutting Georgia Championship Wrestling down. So I said some pretty horrible things to Vince and everybody involved. And then I took off and went to world class, which is probably one of the bigger mistakes of my career. You know, Kim Mantell was doing a job there, but not really. You know, the Von Erich boys were very hard to control. Well, there was no controlling them, you know, and constant problems. They were very hard to do business with. They didn't understand the business, number one. I got hooked up with Mike Von Erich, who didn't even want to be a wrestler, for Christ's sake. And, you know, that whole thing with him dying and everything, man, sickens me. Losing Kerry, what a sweet guy he was. And, you know, it was very frustrating as a talent to be in a territory where you could not do business, where you could not make sense to these guys, you know. And the money was horrible. So I had a very, very bad experience there, man. And, you know, it just, man, I look back and I thought, Jesus Christ, there could have been so much more done there, but not for me.
No, that's the impression that kind of underlines why I thought so much potential, but apparently, you know, whatever didn't work out. So
it was like pulling teeth, man, and nobody enjoys that. Yeah. And it just really pissed me off, man, because I could have went so many different directions at that time. You know, I could have went ahead and went to Vince then, you know, and I would have been a big part of WrestleMania 1 and the whole thing. Which would have made me a lot more damn money. But trying to be true to the NWA, foolishly, I did what I did.
Another question I'd like to ask is, the situation where you first started using the snakes in WWE, of course, you've talked about that many, many times. But I would like to know when and where you really sort of develop the persona that came along before the snakes came along, which is completely unique. Was nothing like it, you know, at that time. Of course, lots have certainly copied you or homaged you since then. And that was what, you know, put you on the map was, you know, and people started paying attention because you weren't doing what other people were doing.
Right. I don't know, man. I've always liked different, you know, different flavors, different looks. And creating outside the box was always a blast. And the whole snake persona, man, was basically me hiding from myself, you know, hiding from my past, hiding from my family, hiding from the ugliness of the way I grew up and the sexual abuse bullshit that I had to deal with, you know. The snake became a character that nobody wanted to be around because you never knew what he was going to do. And chances were he's going to be directed at you. I didn't have friends, man. I didn't travel with people. Very few people that I traveled with over the years, you know. And because I just didn't want people to know about me, you know. And that's the same things that made me sick, you know, and wound up damn near killing me with the addictions and all that, trying to hide, man. And, you know, I tell people that going through the sexual abuse probably helped me in my wrestling career because at a very young age, I learned how to lie. And basically, wrestling is lying. I mean, you're out there doing something that you're not. But I learned to lie at a very young age because I had to. Just to survive. And, you know, the past is the past, and I got to let it go. The book's going to be phenomenal. I think people will get a lot out of that. And
well, I definitely look forward to that because you have a very colorful and very not typical life. So.
No, it's interesting for those that like horror, you know. But, you know, I had so much. And, there's been moments that I wonder, what if I hadn't been an addict? What if I hadn't had all that shit happen to me? Well, sometimes we are what we are because of what we've been through. So I drew from that. I drew from that pain. I drew from that anger. I drew from that shame. So that's what made the character.
Well, it worked. And it's not uncommon for lots of artistic stuff to come from pain, so you know, and that gave you a living for, you know, certainly in as well. But I know Richard's got a couple of questions too. Richard, what take come your turn at bat?
Well, one in particular I had was I have three specific memories growing up and being a wrestling fan, and they all involve you. And I was just wanting an opinion, but three of them are your feuds with Earthquake.
Yeah.
Macho Man, of course, and Ravishing Rick Rude. And I was just wondering, out of those three, does one stand out more than the others, or do you have anything to say?
I think the Macho Man has to, you know. I mean, we did something that had never been done before, man. We, television was not ready for that,
yeah.
You know, and Most people weren't, but shocking the world. It's great to be a part of anything like that. Hooking him up with that Cobra is one of my favorite moments of all time, you know, and why shouldn't it be? The shock and everything, and slapping Elizabeth, and doing things that you shouldn't do, you know. I mean, that's always been the most fun, isn't it? So, yeah, I think that. The thing with Rude was tough because my wife went on the road with me, and she's seen way too much. You know, she's seen other guys being unfaithful and friends being unfaithful, and my wife knew all those wives, man, and of course, she's surmised that if these guys were doing it, I was damn sure doing it too. You know, thank you a lot. And you know what pisses me off, man, is I went and told these guys, guys, here's the hotels I'm staying at. Do not bring your broads here. Shame on them because it created a lot of problems. And they should be ever so grateful to Jake Roberts for not letting his wife talk to their wives.
Imagine.
Yeah. So the thing with Earthquake was special because, you know, the snake that he squashed was actually a pair of pantyhose stuffed with a hamburger meat. And I've always been kind of close to pantyhose. Not that I wear them. You know,
did you stuff it or did somebody else?
We had the ring crew do that. They get all the fun stuff. Right. But it was my. Yeah, it was my idea to stuff it with hamburger meat. That way, when he squashed it, blood would come out. And,
right. And it was so effective, very effective.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the big thing about that thing was during that match, Vince McMahon wanted me to be knocked out of the ring and not see him do that to the snake. I argued. I said, hell no. You know, the most horrific thing is to watch your wife be raped.
Right.
That's what happened. You know, he killed the thing that I supposedly loved or whatever, you know, which we all know better than that. I hate snakes.
So does that mean Dean and Lucifer were actually the same snake?
No, they weren't. No, they weren't. There were many different snakes. There were about 50 different snakes that I went through, man, and they were all a pain in the ass. But, guys, I'm going to need to get going. I've got something I've got to do. Is that all right, bro?
Yeah, if you got to go,
and,
you
got to go. Maybe we can do this again sometime, man. I'm going to be around here for like 10, 12 days, so maybe we can get back together.
Sure.
That'd be great. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jake.
I just want you guys to know that life's a whole lot better if you just reach out and help somebody. And if I can ever do anything for you guys, whether it be with alcohol or drugs or losing weight or anything, please let me reach out and help you, man. And if you know somebody else is having problems, bring them to me. I'd love to talk to them. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.